From the City of Angels off the Pacific Ocean, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation around the world. I'm George Norrie. Welcome to Coast AM. Tonight, Trilogy Night on Coast to Coast. Three major guests and three incredible topics. But first, a small asteroid buzzed right by planet Earth on Monday, though only real astronomers near the Pacific would have noticed the rock, estimated to be no more than 200 feet wide, zoomed past our planet at an altitude of 40,000 feet, came by at 8:44 in the morning Eastern Time, dubbed 2009 DD45. It was discovered only on Friday by Australian astronomers. 40,000 miles might not sound like a lot, but it's only about 1/7 of the way to the moon, less than twice as far out as many telecommunications satellites. Had 2009 hit the planet, it would have exploded on or near the surface with the force of a large nuclear blast, not very reassuring when you consider humanity only had about 3 days' notice. Next hour, the bad astronomer, as he calls himself, Philip Plait, joins us as we talk about asteroids. The Obama administration threw open the curtain on years of Bush-era secrets, revealing anti-terror memos that claimed exceptional search and seizure powers, and divulging that the CIA destroyed nearly 100 videotapes of interrogations and other treatment of terror suspects. The Justice Department released 9 legal opinions showing that following the 9/11-2001 terrorist attacks, the Bush administration determined that certain constitutional rights would not apply during the coming fight. Within 2 weeks, government lawyers were already discussing ways to wiretap U.S. conversations without warrants. The Bush administration eventually abandoned many of the legal conclusions, but the documents themselves had been closely held. By releasing them, President Barack Obama continued a house cleaning of the previous administration's policies. Cuban President Raul Castro replaced 8 ministers in a shakeup that tossed aside prominent figures linked to his older brother Fidel Castro in what was billed as a move to boost government efficiency. The changes put Raul Castro's stamp on the government a year after he took over as president following Fidel Castro's resignation due to illness. You will start seeing a relaxing of relations between Cuba and the United States. My prediction. Stocks tumbled Monday with the Dow and S&P 500 falling to 12-year lows after that insurance company giant AIG's huge quarterly loss added to worries about the financial sector and the economy. The Dow Jones Industrial Average lost almost 300 points. It is now well under 7,000, its lowest point since April 23rd of 1997. And Bernard Madoff is seeking to keep a $7 million Manhattan penthouse and an additional $62 million in assets, saying that they are unrelated to the fraud that authorities say cost victims more than $50 billion. In court papers filed on Monday, Madoff and his lawyer claim that the apartment, $45 million in municipal bonds, and $17 million more in a separate account all belong to Madoff's wife, Ruth. Catherine Austin Fitz, fresh back from Vancouver, Canada, where she was out there with me and Whitley Strieber. Catherine, this entire situation doesn't seem to be working on Wall Street. How come?
What do you mean it doesn't seem to be working on Wall Street?
The stocks keep going down.
Well, the stocks keep going down, but it, you know, when you have a pump and dump, that's what happens during the dump.
Well, when are we going to get a pump?
So, you know, the big question, George, is where has all the money disappeared to? So it's clearly worked for some people.
It has worked for some.
Yeah, it has worked
for some. The few at the top, right?
Well, you know, the money went somewhere. So, you know, think of a lot of the Wall Street firms as vacuum cleaners. So the money's no longer in the vacuum cleaners. That's clear. But it is someplace.
I noticed this morning that the Asian stock markets are continuing to drop, too. Really, Catherine, when is this going to end? I mean,
well,
is there a bottom here?
There's a bottom, but my guess is we're not near it. I mean, George, for 60 years, we've printed paper and credit. And in the last 20 to 30 years, we have literally, to do that, we've drawn tremendous capital out of productive activities and created something that's very imbalanced. And if we want, you know, We have kept the economy going with sort of debt steroids instead of letting it adjust. So now we're going to have a very big adjustment. And unfortunately, the initial signals are we're not shifting capital back into the productive sectors at the speed we need to. And before that can happen, the prices are going to have to find their level.
What is going on with AIG, the insurance company? Why are we continuing to pump billions of dollars into that company? Why don't we just let it go?
Well, I can only guess there, George, but my guess is that AIG was the premier risk manager on the financial fraud and the black budget. And, you know, if you look at AIG's role in the MENA Arkansas story or during Iran-Contra, you know, and I've had personal experience. My one personal experience with AIG is, you know, they are a dirty, dirty player. So if I wanted to find the truth of what had happened in America, the first thing I'd do is I'd seize all of AIG's documents. So I don't think that the Department of Justice and a variety of players can afford for them to go down. And that workout's going to have to be handled carefully, because if you look at the criminal liabilities probably suggested in their archives, it's extraordinary.
They do not want that company under a microscope, do they, Catherine?
Well, they certainly don't want it transparent.
No, it's not. Hey, by the way, let me publicly thank you for coming up to Vancouver.
Oh, thank you,
George.
You did
a great job out there.
What a great audience that was.
Had a great time. Catherine's website's financialpermaculture.com and solari.com as well. You go up there quite often and get the latest on what's going on in this financial world. Thanks, Catherine, again. The Coast Guard rescued a missing boater found clinging to an overturned boat about 30 miles off of Florida's Gulf Coast, but the search continues for three other football players still missing at sea. Nick Schleyer was found on top of the flipped-out boat on Monday afternoon, 2 days after he, Corey Smith, Marquis Cooper, and Will Bleakley left on a fishing trip. Cooper, who owned the 21-foot fishing boat, is an Oakland Raiders linebacker. Smith is a free agent defensive end who played with the Detroit Lions last season. The other two are former University of South Florida players. A ferocious storm packing freezing rain, heavy snow, and furious wind gusts paralyzed most of the eastern coast on Monday, sending dozens of cars careening into ditches, grounding hundreds of flights, closing school for millions of kids. The devastating effects of the storm were also seen up and down the coast. A crash caused a 15-mile traffic jam in North Carolina, forcing police and the Red Cross there to go car to car to check on stranded drivers. The storm was blamed for 350 crashes in New Jersey, and a Maryland official counted about 50 cars in the ditch on just one stretch of a highway. By Monday, the storm had moved north into New England and most areas in the storm's wake, expected to see at least 8 to 12 inches of snow. The weather contributed to 4 deaths, at least on roads in Massachusetts, Rhode Island, and Long Island. Virtually all cases of the most common strain of flu circulating here in the United States now resist the main drug used to treat it, according to the U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. CDC researchers said that 98% of all flu samples from the H1N1 strain were resistant to the Tamiflu, a pill that can both treat flu and prevent infection. 4 patients infected with the resistant strain have now died, including, sadly, 2 children. A 26-year-old North Carolina man has taken the drastic step of having his stomach removed totally to prevent a rare stomach cancer that runs in his family. Brian Chelkin of Huntersville, North Carolina, had his stomach removed 2 weeks ago at Boston's Massachusetts General Hospital. Without a stomach now, he will be limited to eating very small meals and could lose up to 20% of his body weight, but he claims he had to do it. Some of his relatives have also gone through this very rare operation. Email in from Helen in Pensacola, Florida. My granddaughters are friends with a girl at their high school, George. This girl named Cheyenne had a best friend at the same school, was hit by a car and killed last Thursday night as she was walking with some other teens along a 2-lane road. Cheyenne did not know this and had sent her several text messages Thursday night. Well, the next day, the sheriff's department was at the school to make the announcement of her death. After the announcement Friday, my granddaughter's friend Cheyenne received a text from her dead friend, and it was blank. When I heard this, it gave me chills. Me too, Helen. If you go up to the coasttocoastam.com website, you'll see two incredible hot stories there. One, a Chinese man is pulling a car by a rope. No big deal, right? Except that it's attached only to his eyelids, and he pulled a car for 15 feet. And also, a Chinese man is raising a very unusual pet, a two-headed turtle. You can see that little critter as well on coasttocoastam.com. Monday was the 105th anniversary of the birth of Mr. Theodore Seuss Geisel, better known to the world as the incredible Dr. Seuss, and The Cat in the Hat, perhaps the defining book of Ted's career. You know, at the time of his death on September 24th of 1991, Ted had written and illustrated 44 children's books. Over 200 million copies had found their way into the homes and hearts around the world. And on this day in 1893 in St. Louis, Nikola Tesla made the very first public demonstration of radio communication, addressing the National Electric Light Association. He described and demonstrated in detail the principles of radio. The apparatus he used contained all the elements that were incorporated into radio systems before the development of the vacuum tube. In a moment, Mark Seifer joins us. We talk about the incredible life of Nikola Tesla on Coast to Coast AM. Well, welcome back to Coast. I'm George Norrie. In this hour, we're going to talk about Tesla technology. Mark Seifer, internationally recognized expert on Tesla, author of The Wizard, The Life and Times of Nikola Tesla and Transcending the Speed of Light. And his latest book, Transcending the Speed of Light, explores the relationships between thoughts, the physical universe, and the speed of light. Here he is back on Coast to Coast. Hey, Mark, how are you?
Good. How are you doing, George?
Good. Not bad. 1893. Long time ago for Mr. Tesla, wasn't it?
Yes, that was, as you said, his first public demonstration. But actually, in 1891, he lectured at Columbia University before all the professionals, before, in fact, Edison, people like Edison were there, and Pupin. Elmer Sperry was there, who invented the gyroscope. Millikan was there, who was a Nobel Prize winner. And the lecture was so astounding that the people in London wanted to see the lecture, so he lectured in 1892 at the Royal Society in London, and he lectured before Nobel Prize winners like J.J. Thompson and also Lord Raleigh. Also, Lord Kelvin was there, William Crookes, Oliver Lodge, and many others. And I mention all this because he published all of his findings. You know, a lot of people think Marconi invented the radio. Marconi was 17 in 1891. He was 19 in 1893, and Tesla had already published all of the findings, the components to the radio tube, the ground connection,
yeah.
And everything. And when he lectured in St. Louis, which is the topic that you discussed today, because this is the anniversary of this date, there were so many people that showed up, they had to move to a different hall. They had a hall that was going to seat 1,000 people, and that wasn't big enough. 4,000 people attended the lecture. And, of course, one of the reasons was he was going to send 1,000,000 volts through his body to show that alternating current was safe and that Edison's direct current was not the way to go. So he did astounding experiments in radio, but also in this fantastic ability to show that electricity was safe if you knew what you were doing.
Did he get credit, Mark, for the incredible things he came up with?
He certainly was world famous at this point, and he was world famous among the elite. What's very interesting is that two of the people that attended his lecture in London, one of them was Fleming, and the other fellow, his name escapes me right now, William Priest, they began to work for Marconi. So in the early 1890s, Tesla was world famous, and in 1897, Tesla spoke as the inventor of the hydroelectric power system at Niagara Falls, so he was world famous. But in 1901, Marconi sent an impulse across the Atlantic Ocean, and that led to his Nobel Prize. So over time, so I would say all throughout the 1890s and the early 1900s, Tesla was hugely famous all over the world. But as time went on and his wireless plans were eventually dashed his name slowly disappeared, and he became less and less known, and then only the elite really knew of him.
He had an incredible idea to grab energy out of the atmosphere, out of the ether, as we would call it, and to try to get some affordable energy to a lot of people. But he had those hopes dashed, didn't he?
Yes, he did. He had formed a partnership with J.P. Morgan in 1901 to build Wardenclyffe, which is a huge tower out on Long Island. It was 187 feet tall, and it went into the ground, 12 stories. It was 120 feet down into the ground. So the whole length of the tower essentially was 300 feet. And with that tower, he was going to transmit basically cell phone technology, wireless pictures, electric power all over the world. But he ran out of money. And I heard you talking about, you know, the Wall Street situation right now.
Yeah.
What I noticed, there was a panic in 1907. Morgan stopped funding Tesla in 1906. Now, if Tesla had succeeded in 1906, that means that there would be no use for wires. You wouldn't need lumber, you wouldn't need copper, and you wouldn't need rubber. Morgan had investments in all of those.
Particularly copper. It's always follow the money, Mark, isn't it?
Yes. Now, here's what happened, which is beyond belief, and it's what I publish in Wizard, and that is that one of the bankers, his name was Heinz, manipulated the copper stocks in 1907. He dumped a whole bunch of copper stocks onto the market, and what happened was that he thought the copper would drop, but actually copper became more valuable because Tesla's wireless system
didn't work. They didn't do it.
So his bank went under. And he went to Morgan, and it caused all these other banks to go under.
Oh, my God.
And another banker pleaded with Morgan to give him the money. And here's one of the points I wanted to make, is that Teddy Roosevelt, who was president of the United States right at that time, lent or gave Morgan $25 million. They all met at the Morgan Library, and he used the money from the government to bail out the banks, but he didn't bail out one of the banks, and that the owner of that bank committed suicide. So the panic of 1907, I linked directly to Tesla's deal with Morgan. Once the deal was dashed, copper stocks became valuable again, and it was all caused by a manipulation of the copper stock.
Do you think somebody came up to J.P. Morgan and said, what are you involved with this Tesla guy for? Don't you know he's going to render all these commodities that you own and sell useless? Somebody must have told him something.
The story that I heard, and I heard it from Andrea Puharich, and that was that it was Bernard Baruch. Bernard Baruch was a young, very successful man, even at that time. And that's exactly what he said to Morgan. He says, do you realize what's going to happen? You want wires. You want to put meters on houses. You know, Tesla invented the technology to cell phones, the ability to transmit an unlimited number of separate channels. So each of us have our own cell phone. And in those days, without computers and stuff, how do you put a meter on that? How do you know who's using a cell phone?
Yeah.
And Tesla was figuring that you'd make money a different way. You'd make money through the sale of the equipment. They would need batteries. And then, you know, he was also conceiving of radio, that there'd be advertising. I mean, we know ABC, NBC, CBS, we never used to pay for television. And it generated, or radio, it generated tremendous
That's right.
money. So he was looking at it in a totally different way. And Morgan and Bernard Baruch and people like that, they could not understand, if you're providing essentially free airwaves, how could you make money? And of course, they were wrong, because it would have generated, you know, hundreds and hundreds of millions of dollars if Morgan had simply believed in Tesla and given him the money to succeed in the wireless plans that he had in 1901.
Mark, I want to talk when we come back after the break about the Tesla death ray and get your thoughts on that. And you know, some people think it may have been fired over Siberia, and that's what created that explosion over Tunguska. We'll talk about that, and we'll also open up the phone lines and take some calls, too. This being an incredible anniversary where Nikola Tesla, over 100 years ago, spoke in St. Louis and talked about radio. What a mind he had. We'll be back in just a moment with Mark Seifer on Coast to Coast AM. His website is linked up right now in case you want to read up on some of the things he does. I'm George Norrie. We'll take your calls, and we'll continue chatting with Mark Seifer on Coast to Coast AM. And it's trilogy night here at Coast to Coast. Next hour, astronomer Philip Plate joins us. We talk about that asteroid that, well, it was a near miss. I'm not going to say it almost hit us, but I would say it was a near miss. We're going to talk with Philip Plate about that next hour. When we come back, we'll take your phone calls and continue talking with Mark Seifer about the incredible life of Nikola Tesla. And welcome back. We're with Mark Seifer. Mark, tell us a little bit about Tesla's ray. What was he trying to create?
Well, it's a complicated story. I was down in Washington about 1984 when there was the Tesla movie out. In fact, I'm working on a screenplay on a modern take on Tesla.
Good.
And I met a lady who was one of Tesla's workers' daughters-in-law. His name was Zito, C-Z-I-T-O, and she was married to a Zito. And she said that her father, her father-in-law, used to spend time with Tesla in 1918 bouncing beams off the moon. Now, I've never found this any other place but through this one interview. But I track, when you were talking about in 1893, in Wizard how Tesla really invented a laser beam. I explain exactly how he did it. He used a ruby, and he bounced the electrons off a globe and caused the ruby to create a pencil-thin line of light. He never totally realized, I think, what he had, but I think he knew how to create one simple stream of light. But in terms of a death ray, he was trying to create a Star Wars operation. A beam is not strong enough, so he came up with the idea of a particle beam. And he's trying to save Wardenclyffe, and World War One is taking place around 1915. And in fact, Marconi is suing the United States for wireless, and FDR, Franklin Roosevelt, is Assistant Secretary of the Navy. He's speaking with Tesla because he wants Tesla to testify against Marconi because he's saying that Tesla is above Marconi in the invention of the radio, and eventually this is overturned by the Supreme Court in Tesla's favor. So all this is happening at the same time. So Tesla starts to build Wardenclyffe, the big tower on Long Island, as a Star Wars operation. This is in 1915. It's a big article in the New York Times about it. So what I discussed and what I uncovered was he's got two ideas here. One is this particle beam weapon, which is tiny little pellets, which let's say they're if he created a belt of negative ions going around and around in a circle, and if the pellets were also negatively charged and you had a barrel, when they passed by that barrel, they would shoot out. They would be repelled out at a very rapid rate. So what he realized is that a light beam would spread out and wouldn't have any power, but a pellet, particle beam weapon, would never spread out because it's like a bullet. It would be actually little tiny bullets, and that's what his particle beam weapon was. Now the link to Tunguska is actually a link here, because he's bouncing beams off the moon. One of the big questions had to do with the ether. Does the ether exist? And Einstein really screwed up the works when he said there was nothing between the Earth and the sun.
Right,
it was all empty space, which is it's crazy. There's at least light everywhere in the universe, because anywhere you go, you could see all the light from all the stars. So you've got the crisscrossing light beams of light all over the place. And what I uncovered was that Tesla said that the sun was absorbing more energy than it was radiating. Now, we know the sun is radiating a tremendous amount of energy, but if it's absorbing more energy, what does that mean? Well, when I wrote Transcending the Speed of Light, I finally put all this together. What I realized is that light has weight. Photons have a tiny little amount of mass, and that's why they bend towards stars. Space isn't curved, like Einstein said. It's drawn in to the absorption that the planets and the stars, they're absorbing matter all the time. Now, this is all linked to this Tunguska situation. I found a paper, you're not going to believe this, it came from Uzbekistan, and it was supposed to be a secret Tesla paper.
Dated when?
It supposedly was Tesla himself writing.
Okay.
And he supposedly claimed that he created the explosion in Tunguska.
He admitted that in this paper.
Yes. Now, in Wizard, I hypothesized exactly what you just discussed, and that was a meteorite or a meteor skimmed the Earth right around the section of Siberia, and that's why there's no remnants of anything. It didn't really touch the Earth. It came very close and wiped out an area about the size of Rhode Island. This was in 1908. Since Tesla's generator was gone in 1904, I dismissed it. But this paper said that, in fact, he jury-rigged a new generator, and he was bouncing beams off the moon, and he was playing with this etheric grid, this the zero-point energy, and he was testing out the equipment.
Amazing.
And he thought he would choose a place on the planet where there was nobody. So he chose Siberia. So he bounced a beam off the moon while Wardenclyffe was still in existence, and he caused a huge explosion in Siberia.
Oh, my God.
And later he found out that a lot of people died because they were, you know, Eskimos or people, you know, living up there. And he felt terrible about it, so he never told anybody about it. That's what this paper says. Now, did he really write it or not? I don't know. But the paper also said something that totally blew my mind. What the paper said was that Tesla said that light is slowed down to 186,000 miles a second by the ether. That statement, in all my years, 50, 60 years of studying all this stuff, I never heard anybody say anything like that.
No, nor have I.
But it makes total sense that just like sound is slowed down by the air, why wouldn't whatever this high energy would be is slowed down by the ether? And I found in George Gamow's book, 30 Years That Shook Physics, that when they first measured the speed of electrons spinning, they were spinning at 1.37 times the speed of light. So I pieced all this together in Transcending the Speed of Light, and I think I pretty much solved Einstein's dream of grand unification. And it's very easy to explain. All the planets and all the stars are absorbing ether all of the time to keep their particles spinning. That makes sense, right? For the particles to spin, they have to absorb some type of energy.
Right.
Okay? Now, Gamow, who's a well-respected physicist, says it's 1.37 times the speed of light. In other words, electrons are spinning faster than the speed of light. Physicists today use the square root of negative 1 to stand for this. So they use some, it's called an imaginary number, because they can't deal with the fact that it's violating relativity. Now, if the zero-point energy or the etheric grid is being absorbed all of the time by the matter in the universe, those particles are transforming that into electromagnetism. So what gravity is the absorption of ether, which is what Tesla essentially said, and combining gravity with electromagnetism, which was Einstein's dream of grand unification, would be that the transformation, as the electrons are spinning, they're constantly absorbing energy all of the time, and they're transforming it into electromagnetic energy. So there's a giant sinkhole around every single planet and star because they're all absorbing energy. And that's why light bends towards these, because they're being pulled in to this indraft.
What a mind.
So what we think is gravity might really be, you know, why is the Earth, staying in orbit around the sun? It might be competition for ether. In other words, the Earth has a certain amount that it can absorb. The sun has a certain amount it can absorb. And there's an equilibrium set up, and the Earth is in an orbit around there. So all of this is derived from Tesla's idea and his particle beam weapon and his Star Wars stuff and this crazy paper I found, supposedly from Uzbekistan, that Tesla had and a fireman, you know, found in an empty building in New York, and he hid it away for many years. And so I discuss a lot of that in Transcending the
Speed
of Light.
You know, he was born too early, Mark. Had he been born, not in 1856, but in 1900, who knows what he could have developed. Let's take a few calls here. Jason in Lansing, Michigan, you're up with us. Hi, Jason.
Good. How about you?
Good.
Thanks for taking my call. I just had a question. I never knew Tesla was a real person. I seen him in the Prestige, and I was wondering, was there any truth to the way he was portrayed in that movie?
No, but it was great that they put him in a film. But I thought that David Bowie, who had played Tesla in the movie The Man Who Fell to Earth 25, 30 years ago, I thought he was too flat in that movie. I think The Prestige is a great film. But I would have put Kramer in. I would have put some exciting guy like Kramer from Seinfeld, who would have, took your breath away. He was very boring in that film. But the film is a superb movie, And that whole dematerialization thing was total fiction. But a lot of it was accurate in the sense that you got the feel of living at the turn of the century and how Tesla would have been. So I think to that extent, it was true to him.
Let's go to Pennsylvania. Dwayne, east of the Rockies, you're up with Mark Seifer. Hi, Dwayne.
Hi, George. Hi, Mark. Tremendous program. I'm trying to find an answer to a question about whether the story is true or an urban legend, and that is regarding the account of Tesla getting a 1931 Pierce Arrow, taking out the gasoline engine, putting in a 90-horsepower alternating current motor, and then getting a control box that he made in his lab. It consisted of 12 vacuum tubes that have 2 4-inch antennas coming out, and perhaps another large antenna in the back of the car that tapped into the ether and used that tremendous energy to power the car without any batteries. Is there any truth to that?
Well, I discussed that in Wizard, and it is my belief that he had the car up in Buffalo. Now, why did he have in Buffalo? Because he needed to be by a giant power source. So I think he was using the power from electromagnetic power from Niagara Falls rather than absorbing it from the ether, because if it could absorb it from the ether, why would he have gone all the way up to Buffalo? So he was very near Niagara Falls, so I think he was using some form of transmission of power, electrical power, which is what he always talked about, but I think it was traditional. I don't think he was tapping zero-point energy in the use of that car.
That's still a great story, though.
Yeah, sure is. And, you know, there's a company now making a Tesla car. Is there not, Mark?
Yes, Tesla Motors.
Yep.
And it's funded by the head of eBay, Google, and PayPal. These are all young billionaires, all very interested, all Tesla heads. And Al Gore's on that board of directors, too. And I try to contact Al Gore. I don't know if he's ever been on your show.
No, he hasn't.
But Tesla is the most important single person for slowing down global warming in the history of, you know, the last 200 years. I mean, Tesla's hydroelectric power system is clean energy. It's renewable. It doesn't pollute. It doesn't sap the ground from oil or anything like that. And it stopped the coal operating power plants that Westinghouse and Edison and Thomson Houston were putting up. You know, they had thousands of coal-operating plants in the 1890s, and Tesla's system came in at Niagara Falls and put all those, you know, one clean energy system, put all those polluting systems out of business. So he's the one person most responsible for slowing down global warming.
Mark, is it true that when Tesla died in 1943, his office apartment was raided and his papers were taken by government officials?
Yes. I used the Freedom of Information Act of a big section in Wizard on that. He was working with the War Department. I mentioned the actual people's names who were involved. And they came in, they took his papers, and there was a guy from MIT. His name was Trump. There's something called the Trump Report, where they discussed the particle beam weapon. But I also think that it's possible. I'm not sure about the Tunguska thing, but it makes some sense that he might have had other secret weapons that we don't know about. I discuss it at great length in Wizard.
Andrea in South Beach, California, west of the Rockies. Hi there.
Hi, yeah. I was going to ask about the Tesla car, too, but also I'd like to know about, is there a plan for a Tesla museum at the Warden Cliff site? I believe the building's still there. And is there any voice recording of Tesla?
There is a voice recording, and I discuss it in Wizard. No one's been able to locate it. I got the name of the guy who recorded his voice. There's also footage, which everybody in the universe has been looking for. In the 1930s, he was filmed, and no one has been able to locate that. I'm speaking at CW Post on Radio Day on April 18th at 12 noon on Long Island, and this is from the group that's trying to get a museum at Wardenclyffe. When Hillary Clinton was senator, we contacted her, and we've been trying to get Wardenclyffe, the actual laboratory, still sits out there right on Long Island in Suffolk County. It's a beautiful building built by Stanford White, and it should be a museum. I mean, he's a national treasure, and we should definitely have a Tesla museum located right there at the site of Wardenclyffe.
Mark, wouldn't Tesla still have a difficult time trying to get free or cheap energy across to the world today?
Yes. I think today with the Internet happened so rapidly they couldn't figure out how to charge for email. That's what happened. But I think they're racking their brains now. All these newspapers are going out of business, and one of the reasons is the Internet.
Sure, absolutely.
So we're in a turmoil right now. It's good for the consumer, but it's also bad because if we lose the newspapers, you know, you have to pay for these things. I mean, you have to pay for reporters to go out and do these things. It's a very difficult situation. So I think Tesla, I think he wanted to provide the energy for free, kind of like the internet, and he thought the revenue stream would come in a different way. And I think we've yet to see how what's going to happen with the newspapers. How can we keep these newspapers in business and still have the internet be free?
San Diego caller in California, Daniel, go ahead, Dan.
Hi, how are you doing tonight?
Good. Thanks.
Hey, well, I'm the same nationality as Tesla, and of course, I've done extensive studies as far as Tesla and its history and its background. The one thing that there's some researchers, not too much here in the United States for some weird reason, but definitely back in Serbia and in other parts of the East, they basically say that when they look at the work that Tesla did in frequencies and vibrations, and that's basically all of his work is, whether it be the fluorescent light bulb or the AC generator or the sympathetic harmonizer he made that almost shook a building apart and that he said that could shake the whole planet apart, the statement he made in Popular Science, and other things that he did, the death ray. All of them have something to do with either frequency, vibrations, harmonies, and it seems that possibly Nikola Tesla had an understanding of quantum mechanics before quantum mechanics was even being studied at the time. Because of all his work, because most of quantum mechanics deals with strings, vibrations, frequencies that do certain things, you know, in physics. And the other thing is that when you were mentioning about the particle beam, there was some recent paperwork that was found. And when they looked at the diagrams, some of the researchers got shocked because these were some of the original drawings that Tesla was coming up with, the so-called death beam. But some of the rudimentary drawings that he came up with, when they looked at them, they actually were more like lasers than an actual particle beam because of the way they had a central crystal. It had a high-frequency oscillating light, you know. So there's some researchers now looking at some of this stuff saying that possibility that Tesla's original idea for the death beam was actually a laser almost 60 years before a laser actually was ever tested here in the U.S.
And it is incredible, we're running out of time here, it is incredible that we are moving that way for defensive and offensive purposes, Mark.
Well, one of the things that this fellow was talking about is I wanted to put in Wizard, and I made a very clear here, that Tesla came up with the idea that atoms were shaped like orbits. He said light was waves and particles. In other words, Einstein, Bohr, and Rutherford. Rutherford was very influenced by Tesla, and Bohr spoke at Tesla's 100th birthday. These guys got Nobel Prizes for the work that Tesla did, and Tesla belongs in the history of physics. He published all of this stuff, and I track all this. So this fellow is definitely right.
How did he get so intelligent? Was he just, what happened to him?
I think partly it was the Serbian community. They had to memorize everything. His mother was illiterate. She couldn't read, but she memorized the entire Bible.
Just amazing.
You know, memorized great poems. So they were trained to use their mind greatly. But also, you know, I think it was just, he was a genius. I mean,
yes,
there's only one like him.
Very well gifted. Mark, thank you so much for being on the program. Part two of our trilogy night tonight, up in just a moment, the astronomer Philip Plait, as we talk about asteroids. This one came really close. Are there others out there? We'll be back.